You. Hey everyone, and welcome back to the Advisor. So today we get to hear from someone that I deeply adore. So Tom Cronin is back, and truthfully, he's not just adored by me, but he's adored by millions of people around the world. His story is one that is raw and real. It's as raw and real as it gets, actually. For more than 26 years, he lived in a high-pressure world of finance, and it eventually caught up with him. The stress, the anxiety, the panic attacks, the sleepless nights. At his breaking point, he discovered stillness. And in that moment, that's when everything shifted. From there, he walked away from that pressure cooker life and stepped fully into his true calling, meditation, leadership, coaching, and conscious living. He became not only a teacher, speaker, and author, but a true champion of inner peace. So, what I love most about this beautiful man is that he brings stillness down to earth. He makes it relatable, accessible, and real. And he does it with humility and humor and a gentle warmth that everyone can literally feel. And then there's his mission, his Stillness Project, a global movement with one bold vision to inspire a billion people. That's right, I said a billion people to embrace daily stillness. His work brings calm to chaos, connection where we feel disconnected, and meaning to the everyday. And if that's not enough, his latest work continues to ripple out in powerful ways. He even recently shared the stage with Jane Fonda at Wanderlust, showing just how global and relevant this message of stillness truly is. So it is so good to have you back, Tom. How are you doing? How's Australia?
It's beautiful as always. I love Australia and I love that bio. Can I borrow that? It's really cool. Thank
Hey,
you
I
for that
wrote most of
introduction.
that. That was most of my words, believe it or not.
Very
Yes, you can
impressed. I
have
like it. Thank you.
it. I'm so excited to talk to you today because, I mean, we've covered many different things on over the episodes, and we got really deep on a lot of these topics, but today it would be good to just simplify things, I think.
Yeah, I like that. Simplicity is such an important component to reality. You know, we tend to, particularly our minds, overcomplicate things, overanalyze, over-ruminate, and over-contemplate. And I think one of the greatest ways to live a very fulfilling life is to live life very simply.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. So, for those who don't know your story, can you share just briefly what life was like in finance and that pivotal moment that led you to discover stillness?
Yeah, I was speaking of not in simple lives, that was a very complicated life. You know, I was a broker in finance, and you know, at that time I was driven by an ego that has an insatiable desire. You know, all egos, it's not you, the personality, the individual, it's the ego, the construct of the ego. And it was in this constant state of craving. And it was satiating this craving with, you know, lots of energy, lots of money, lots of partying, lots of drinking, lots of drugs. And as a broker, this was something that I was very drawn to, you know, at the young age between 19 and 29, for the first 10 years of that career, I was pulled into that very excessive hedonistic world. And what the beautiful thing about the universe is it's very good at realigning us. If we are finding ourselves out of orbit, out of alignment to the path trajectory that we're here as a soul to be on, to have self-discovery, self-realization, then the universe will give us some very strong and firm guidance systems, usually karma, and it's usually quite painful. It doesn't find pleasurable experiences to be very good at guiding us in another direction. It usually uses pain. So I was getting a lot of anxiety, panic attacks, depression, and this eventually morphed into really a mental breakdown. It was pretty severe. I was having suicide ideation, extreme panic attacks, really deep, dark depression. And a lot of that was just the horrible addictions that I was grappling with from all sorts of different things. And that deep, dark night of the soul was when I started to look for other alternatives, other solutions. And that's when I came across meditation, particularly transcendental meditation or Vedic meditation. And it really was not just the technique itself, such a game changer, but what I really was magnetized by and drawn to was the depth of the knowledge, the philosophy that was just so profound and so deep and so science-based that with the technique and the knowledge, those two things together, it was just a really powerful transformation that I went through very quickly. And I went deep down the rabbit hole for many years, doing lots of advanced training and advanced studies in Australia and India and Bali.
Wow. So in your, in the simplest words, like what does stillness actually mean?
If we really break it down into simplicity, it's the absence of motion. Okay, so that's the basic form. So people say, "Oh, I meditate when I go for a run." It's like, well, you're not really in stillness. It can be a form of meditation. People say when I do laps in the pool, it's quite meditative. So it can be meditative, but it's not stillness. So when we talk about absence of motion, we're talking about absence of motion physically and absence of motion mentally. This is the most important part, because you can be in a pool doing laps and it can be quite repetitive, but you can be ruminating about your electricity bill. You can be ruminating about something you said at work. You can be ruminating about an annoying email that you've got to respond to. Even though the action of and movement can be quite meditative, but the mind is very busy and contemplative. So when we get into stillness, that is that deep transcendent state where there's no neurological activity, as far as no thoughts happening in the mind. We're now in what we call pure consciousness. So pure consciousness is a state where the mind is no longer thinking, yet we're still awake. And what leads to, as a result of that state of no motion or activity in the mind, is a deep physiological de-excitation in the body. So now we've got stillness of mind, stillness of body. And this is the key component to this meditation, as opposed to other forms of meditation, not just swimming and running and dancing, but also, not to discredit them, they're obviously beautiful practices and very relevant. I still swim and run and dance. But what we're talking about here is getting to a point where there's an alignment between stillness in the mind and stillness in the body. And that is a really powerful state to get into. In Sanskrit, it's called turiya. Turiya means the fourth state. So that's a state beyond unconscious deep sleep. It's a state beyond dream state, which we have in sleep, and it's a state beyond thinking state, which we have throughout the day. And this fourth state is a very rare state for humans to get into, but every human can access it. It's the state where we're awake and not thinking. And to get into that, I find there's very few meditation practices that will get us to that realm, where there's stillness in mind and body.
So why does stillness have such a powerful effect on our stress, anxiety, and sleep?
It's a really good question. It works twofold. The two main benefits that happen when we're in Turiya, this fourth state, where we're awake and we're not thinking. So, firstly, it's been scientifically proven in medical studies and biological studies that the physical body reaches a state of rest, metabolic rest, that is 4 to 5 times deeper when we're awake and not thinking, as opposed to when we're asleep and not thinking. So deep sleep is a state where we're asleep and we're not thinking and we're unconscious. That's why we have to lie down, because the body can't sit upright in that state. Whereas in meditation, you can sit upright and be in Turiya, a state where there's no thoughts, but you're awake this time. And this state reaches a state of metabolic rest 4 to 5 times physically deep, and that's measured through basal skin resistance, through blood pressure, through breath rate, heartbeats. And if you think about, if you're lying next to a partner in bed, you kind of know when they fall asleep, because their breathing goes from something that you can only just hear to, their
Yeah, or
breathing
they
actually gets
snore really
heavier
loud.
and louder, right? And so there's actually, interestingly, quite a lot of activity happening while they're sleeping. And when we're in meditation, there's almost no breath at all. It's quite phenomenal. There's almost zero oxygen intake in that deep meditative state. So firstly, we get incredibly deep physiological rest. Now, what's the importance of that? When we have profoundly deep states of physiological rest when we're awake, the body has greater capacity to heal and restore balance than it does when we're asleep. And this is a really powerful phenomenon. I was riddled with anxiety, depression, panic attacks, agoraphobia, constantly colds and flus, because my body was in a state of disarray. And yet I was still sleeping every night. And when I started meditating, within days and weeks, those anomalies simply melted away and were cleared out of the body. And the analogy I like to use for this, just to help people scientifically understand this, because a lot of people are saying, "Ah, I don't believe it." If we take a broken leg, now the broken leg happens because of activity. So, some form of excitation, kicking soccer balls, running down a mountain, riding a bike. So, activity has caused the break and the anomaly. But to fix the anomaly, we put a cast around it. We don't use medicine, we don't use therapy, we don't use doctors, we don't use psychologists, we don't
Right.
point fingers at the leg and talk to the leg and try and make it heal. We simply put a cast around it. And what the cast is doing is creating profound stillness. We're not going to let this move. We're going to create stillness for the leg so that the intelligence within the body, phenomenal intelligence, knows how to actually fix the leg down to
Right.
a cellular level. So the same process applies to the body. If I put my body into deep stillness, deeper than sleep, then the body will repair that anomaly. And the anomaly was that I was in sympathetic nervous system for way too long. It's supposed to be short bursts of, yeah, hey, someone's pulling a knife on me in the street, short burst of stress, or there's a saber-tooth tiger chasing me from around the corner, short burst of stress. And then we go into the parasympathetic, which is the rest and repair. But the problem is, we're not giving our bodies the opportunity to get into that rest and repair for long enough or deep enough to give it the opportunity to restore that balance. So what happens is the same as the cast around the leg. If we put the body consistently on a daily basis into rest and repair, a deep state of rest in the meditation, and most of those anomalies physiologically will start to heal and sort themselves out of its own accord because the body's got a profound capacity to do that. So first one is the physical body. The second one is the expansion of mind. So what we have in our mind, in everyone's mind, are these sort of software codes. So it's like your phone, say the Apple phone has an iOS operating system that was coded by other people. And they put that code into the phone, and that's the operating system for the code for the phone. And so we all have an operating system that predominantly is coded by our society, by our peers, by our generation, by our parents and grandparents. And so we're running around with these operating systems, these thought tracks in our head that are predominantly inserted into us by other forces, other entities, other people. And that becomes our mode of operation in life. And this is not a clear functionality of who we are. It's a large in part representation of other people and the culture and the society that's constructed our ability to think in a particular way. These are called vasanas. A vasana is a tendency of the mind, a pattern of thinking that we operate on usually between 85 to 90% of the day. Is this vasana, a tendency of our mind to think in a particular way? And we have this very limited perimeter of thoughts that we have, 50 to 60,000 of them every day, but they sit within a very tight container. And they don't really move out of that container, like, I've got to pay my electricity bill, or I'm no good, or money's really hard to come by, or love is painful. And they just keep, like goldfish in a goldfish bowl, just keep doing laps around this very small perimeter of thought tracks. But when we transcend the thinking mind, we access the field of conscious awareness. And that field isn't in the mind, we're in the field of mind. So we're in the
Right.
infinite field of infinite possibility, infinite creativity. And it's like the phone is in the internet. The internet's not in the phone. So all information, the phone's in the information field. And we
Right,
just
the
turn it on.
information's already there. We just got
That's
to
right.
enter it.
That's right. And we've got to open ourselves to it. And so when we're in the vasanas and just in the thinking mind, we're having a very small, mediocre realm of possibility. But when we transcend the thinking mind and access the field of mind, and that's when our mind opens up into the expansiveness of infinite mind, then we get incredible downloads, incredible epiphanies, incredible impulses. And that's why Oprah Winfrey, who does these deeper transcending meditations, she said, it is only from that space can you create your best work and your best life. And so stillness plays two main benefits, just to summarize, because I know that was a long, long answer. Firstly, physiologically, it's profound at healing the body. And secondly, it's profound at expanding the minds and, of course, the hearts as well.
I love the analogy used with the cast because I practice stillness all the time, but the way you describe that and that the body can heal itself when it's in stillness, that makes so much sense to my mind because your arm is in a cast, so it can't move. It's essentially in stillness when it's broken,
Yeah.
so the body can heal itself.
Yeah,
Yeah,
we're told as
that makes a
teachers to
lot of
recommend.
sense.
Yeah, we're told as teachers to recommend to our students if they're sick or there's a problem, physiologically, then increase your meditations. Give the body the opportunity to repair itself in the meditation. And so, not many doctors would recommend that, but we find that it's phenomenal. It's not going to heal everything, of course. I'm not going to suggest that there are certain things that just meditation alone is going to be able to heal. It's definitely not the case. So I don't want anyone to be trying to sue me for not healing them because they started meditating more.
I meditated for 40 days straight and I'm still not healed.
Yeah, but it definitely has profound effects on healing deep traumas and also some physiological wounds as well.
So I've heard this a million times and you've heard it a million times. For someone who thinks meditation is too hard or that they don't have time or they can't do it, like, what's the easiest way to start or what do you tell those people? Because I'm sure you hear that all the time.
Yeah, firstly, the too hard component is definitely a case for some meditations. So first, we've got to understand that not all meditations are the same. Some meditations require a lot of effort. They're very challenging because you're trying to force the mind to do something that it doesn't want to do. So if you take a 15-year-old teenager that's quite rebellious and you put perimeters around it and say, there are some things you can't do. And now the teenager who is used to doing whatever it wants to do, now there's conflict because the teenager's up against a boundary line that it doesn't like. And so you've got a parent putting in a boundary line and a teenager trying to push the boundary line. And now you're going to have conflict. And this is going to get uncomfortable and messy in the house because you've got one person saying no and the other person saying yes. The same thing happens with the mind with some meditations. When we say, I'm going to force you to be still, and the mind's like, I don't want to be still. It's like, no, I'm going to force you to be still. It's like, I don't want to be still. And so now we have stress, we have conflict, and it's uncomfortable. And that's when those people that are doing those meditations say, look, this is really hard. I don't like doing uncomfortable things. I don't like conflict. I don't like struggle. I like doing simple things like eating ice cream and watching Netflix. That's much easier and much more pleasurable. So I'm going to do something that's easier and more pleasurable. So with Vedic meditation or transcendental meditation, we take all that effort and concentration and toil out of the meditation practice. And we introduce something very effortless for the mind. It's called a mantra. And the mantra becomes a very simple, gentle resonance that the mind's really quite enamored by. It's very entertained, it's very charmed by this wonderful repetition. So, for instance, if we take that teenager analogy and we say to the teenager, listen, I know you want to push over this boundary line, and I know that that's uncomfortable for you, but how about I give you something really charming that keeps you very entertained? And you're very comfortable staying within the boundary line. And the teenager's like, well, that sounds like a good proposition. I like that idea. Yeah, that sounds cool. And now all of a sudden, the teenager is very comfortable to sit within that confinement. And so, with the mantra, what it does is that it provides something very charming for the mind that is an alternative to the thinking about the world outside of itself. And the quality of these mantras, these are called Bija mantras, they lure the mind effortlessly. Like a carrot in front of a donkey or a banana in front of a monkey. So, if you've got a monkey that's jumping around from limb to limb looking for something that's charming, and we just stand down the bottom and we put a little banana there in our hand, the monkey will quite inquisitively look to see what's down there and start to come down and sit at your feet very effortlessly. And that's because it's found something quite charming. And that's what the mantra does. It makes the meditation effortless. So, I would suggest if someone's finding meditation uncomfortable or difficult, the first thing we say is, explore other alternatives. And what I found and why I teach Vedic meditation is because I found it really easy. I found it very blissful. I found it very effortless. And that's how I managed to integrate this into my day and why we see really high retention rates with people doing this meditation practice because it's such a blissful, effortless process. And coming back to now the next part of the question, which is how do I respond if people say they don't have time in their day? We've got to understand the granular and the minutiae of what motivates action. So every day we have 24 hours, and in every hour there are three portions of 20 minutes. That means there's 72 20-minute pieces of pie. So we've got a pie chart with 72 little pieces of pie, and every little 20-minute piece of pie is allocated to finding fulfillment. That's the underlying motivating factor behind every single action. So every single person on the planet right now are moving into action. whether they're driving to the grocery store, or whether they're going to the gym, or whether they're sending some emails, or whether they're watching Netflix, or whether they're listening to Spotify, or listening to this podcast. The thing that motivates all action is to make life better. It's that simple. Make life better. So, someone doing crack cocaine in a ghetto, someone going to a monastery in Tibet, someone going to do a parachute jump, they want to make life better. So, we know that all that chasing in activity, we can simply ask humanity. If we did a poll of the 7.8 billion people on the planet, every single person, if everyone had to fill in a poll today and we asked them all, is your life better and are you happy? I think we'd probably find that there's a high portion, not all, but there's a high portion of people on the planet that would say, no, I'm not actually. And that's because all the chasing, we can't find what we're looking for in action. This is the reality. We can't find what we're looking for. It can improve our life, of course. It's not to say we're going to suddenly stop doing action. We're going to continually do action anyway. We're going to read a book. We're going to go to the gym. We're going to go to work. We're going to make money. We're going to lose money. All of this is part of the process of being here in this three-dimensional matrix world. So we're not to discourage that, but what we want to do is we want to find happiness or fulfillment, I'd like to say, rather than happiness. Find fulfillment first. There's a beautiful Sanskrit quote, Yogastha Kuru Kamani. Established in being, which is fulfillment, perform action. So we look to reverse the code or construct that society is operating by, which is outcome-oriented fulfillment. Go into action for fulfillment. We flip that and say, go into action from fulfillment. When we stabilize an internal arising of fulfillment within through ultimately a meditation practice, we tap into the bliss energy of the divine that is in the heart, then what happens is love and fulfillment becomes our standing point. It's our starting point. It's the starting point that action comes from. Now you'll find that people that have love and fulfillment within themselves have quite different actions than someone that has lack and fear or worry or anger as the starting point for their action. So we really want to inspire humans to realize the inner capacity that fulfillment lies within them, as we've heard many times before.
You have such a beautiful way of explaining that. I would just tell someone to put their damn phone away for 20 minutes and get it
That's the other option.
done. A lot of the time, people are just like, I have no time, but they have so much time.
Yeah, totally. It's just
I like your
preferences.
explanation better.
In every day and in every moment, there are competing preferences. And there's sometimes
Totally.
one, two, or three. Sometimes there's thousands of competing preferences. So competing preferences, one thing that is competing for nothing. Do I have strawberry ice cream or chocolate ice cream? There's competing preferences. Do I go to the gym or do I go and watch Netflix? Do I drink a apple cider vinegar shot of ginger drink, or do I drink a beer? These are in every moment competing preferences with our time and attention. And it's really about, for me, when it comes down to these competing preferences, what I'm looking to choose when I get to make choices around my time allocation and my attention allocation is what is the best investment of my time and attention for long-term fulfillment, as opposed to how do I get the shortest dopamine hit? So one of those examples would be my spiky mat. I have a what's called Shakti mat. Now, the Shakti mat is a very uncomfortable spiky mat that I lie on before bed at night, and it's not comfortable, right? It's painful, and it's not a short-term gain, right? But when I lie on a Shakti mat, I actually fall asleep on it many nights because it's really relaxing. And it gives
That's
you a
hardcore.
long-term investment of benefits that come from this sort of hardcore acupuncture process of lying on a spiky mat before bed. In the morning, most people might gravitate towards a very sweet orange juice or maybe a hit of caffeine with a coffee. But for me, it's not enjoyable and it's certainly not nice. But I have some apple cider vinegar in some warm water and it's not very nice, it's not pleasurable, it doesn't give me a dopamine hit, but I know the long-term benefit of that alkalizing and the rebalancing of my pH levels in my body sets me up, among many other things in my morning routine, to have a successful day ahead, because my body's in a much better state starting with that alkalizing, hydrating drink of half a liter of that in the morning. Is much, much better than having a very sugary orange juice or a hit of caffeine, which dehydrates my body and creates more acidity in my body.
And then the rest of your day, you're going to slowly go downhill.
Fate, that's right. So competing preference is all about what's going to give me the best long-term investment rather than the short-term hit.
I want to talk about the Stillness Project for a second. So, your mission is 9 billion people to sit in stillness. Why 9 billion people?
Well, the original tagline was to inspire 1 billion people to meditate daily. And
Oh, a billion. It is a billion. I said nine. I added nine.
yeah,
No
it's all
pressure.
right.
No
There's no pressure. We haven't
pressure.
even got 9 billion people on the planet yet. So for
Nine
the
billion.
future people before they come here.
Hey, we're talking about the whole universe here. This is about expanding the
Yeah,
mind.
exactly.
That's
All
what
the
we're trying
souls,
to
exactly. All the previous incarnations as well. I love that.
So, a
The
billion
initial,
people.
yeah, initially it was going to be 1 million. And when I was working with my, I guess, advisory team to set up my business, the branding, the logo, the taglines, it was crafted by a body of people. These days you just use ChatGPT, I guess, and saved me the $100,000 that I spent on all of that. But, when I said 1 million, they're like, look, you could hit 1 million in 5 years' time, but how long do you want to be doing this for? And I said, I don't know, I'll probably be doing this for the rest of my life. And at the time I was 44, and they said, well, that's another 50 years of you doing that. So, you'll hit your target in 5 years' time. What are you going to do then? Twiddle your thumbs and play lawn bowls? Like, you're going to have a target that's going to really stretch things. And so interestingly, they were right, because within the 5 years, we'd already not necessarily taught 1 million people to meditate, but certainly had been in front of and inspired over 1 million people through companies like Mindvalley, Mind Movies, that had all promoted me, and I'd done work with those companies that had huge multi-million followers. And we had a film come out that was seen all around the world. I had a lot of other things, like being in front of large audiences with Jane Fonda. And so they were right, in the end, that I had underestimated, because at the time, when we're at, this is what I do a lot of work with conscious leaders, it's like, I'm not interested in where you are and what you want to do today. What I'm interested in is what you want to do in 5 to 10 years' time, because you're going to be doing this for a long, long time. If you're a breath worker, yoga teacher, meditation teacher, it's not like you're going to go back to stacking shelves in a supermarket. So, like Marianne Williamson and Neil Donald Walsh and Deepak Chopra and Bob Proctor, who recently passed, you're probably going to be doing this till the last days of your life. There won't be anything else you'll find more fulfilling than doing your work and bringing transformation to the planet. So, what I like to help people appreciate and forecast, and this is when we get out of these vasanas that play in very limited spaces, I want people to stretch beyond that perimeter and that boundary line to start looking at the future version of yourself in 5, 10, 15, 20 years' time, and start building a business around that future version of yourself rather than the current version of yourself. Or some people play with the previous version of themselves, which is really, that traumatized, insecure, self-doubting, unworthy human that they're still holding on to from the previous version of themselves. So that can really limit their capacity. So I like to play with their future version of themselves.
I love that. So, like, how would our personal stillness affect the people around us? And, like, what do you see as the ripple effect after a billion people are in stillness? What is your vision of that?
Yeah, it's such a beautiful question, and it excites me a lot, because we have this phenomenon called an event horizon, or a sphere of influence. So a sphere of influence is the vibrational resonance that is not just the frequency that we're emitting from our body. This is an incredible phenomenon that people will come into contact with you, and they'll feel a vibration. They'll go, oh, you've got such good energy. Or people will actually queue up to get into the embrace physical embrace of hugging Ama. So Ama is a very enlightened rishi or sage that travels the world. She does talks, but the main thing is that she stands at the front of this large auditorium, 10,000 people, and people will queue for 24 hours to get a
Wow.
hug from her, because when they come into her embrace, her frequency is so powerful, so potent, they literally get an activation. And this is what we call darshan. Darshan is a resonance that influences someone else into a higher vibration through either our gaze or by coming into a hug, or it could be that they're just standing close to us. So that's the vibrational resonance that can transform people. And what we found is that when people are in a state of peace or enlightenment, there's such a high vibration. It's 700 to 1000 hertz, HERTZ. So shame, guilt, anger, fear, they're between 20 and 70 hertz, very low frequencies. The lowest frequencies, shame and guilt, anger, fear, and the highest frequencies for a planet, for a human, sorry, is 700 to 1000, which is peace, enlightenment, and they're very high. So when we can get people into these high vibrations of peace and enlightenment, what happens is they start to have a resonance and influence on others around them. And it's not just the vibrational resonance that emits out of their body, but it's actually the other things that come out of their body as well, which are words, their gaze, their thoughts, and their actions. These are all things that are being emanating from the vibration that they're in. So if I've got a vibration of anger, then my thoughts, my words, my gaze, my actions will be an expression of that vibration that's in my body. So the primary objective for me to create change on the planet is to get to people to peace, 600 hertz, which is the gateway through to enlightenment. We can't get to enlightenment without peace. And how do we get
Right.
peace? Peace is the absence of motion, which is stillness. Stillness is
Right.
peace. So if we get people to stillness, what happens is an elevator lift up to peace, which is 600 hertz, the gateway to enlightenment. And then their thoughts, their words, their gaze, their actions, and their emanation of vibration becomes an influencing effect on people around them. And a classic example is actually my story. So I went from being a narcissistic asshole broker, which was causing wreak and havoc in the world through my state. And then I went into, and just think about someone that's deeply riddled with anxiety, depression, and suicide ideation. What is the
Right.
impact that that person's having on their loved ones around them? Worry, fear, all sorts of
Anxiety.
panic, anxiety, right? So there's a ripple effect of that. It's really quite, tangible. When we have
Yeah.
someone that is in a deep state of peace, so in 3 days' time, I'm going to Bali and running a retreat for 6 days for 20 people. That is a sphere of influence emanating from me to other people through action. That and also my vibration that is going to deeply transform their lives. My blogs,
Yeah.
my social media, this podcast alone, no doubt someone, hopefully someone in the world is listening to this and their vibration is changing while they're listening to my words and hearing this conversation. So the way I see transformation on the planet and how we get from the age of ignorance to the age of enlightenment is simply get more people meditating, get more people into peace or stillness, and then that alone will create better actions, better words, better businesses, and more love, more kindness on the planet. So quite
Yeah, for
simple, really.
sure.
It really is quite amazingly simple. All we have to do is get people to spend just a little bit of time each day, 20 minutes morning, 20 minutes afternoon, or an hour in the morning, hour in the afternoon, or an hour in the lunchtime, whenever they want to do it, sometime each day. And what we found is that those people that are in states of enlightenment, we found one common denominator. They all put aside time from activity to go into meditation. Quite phenomenal.
Right.
And yeah, that's my motivation. That's how I see the world changing.
And you know what's the crazy part is that it's absolutely free, essentially. I know there's a course, but meditation is free. Like simple things like breath work have changed my life, and it's inexpensive. People think that they're going to purchase like the drugs and the caffeine, and they're expending all of their resources on things that aren't really helping, and the simplest things are the most effective.
Yeah, it's a really interesting time that we're going through on the planet. If you think about how much money on a daily basis, if we could do an audit of the planet and work out how much money today in the last 24 hours from this moment, from 24 hours before, was spent on alcohol, Okay.
Oh, yeah.
And then we work out how much money was spent on recreational drugs. And then we work out how much money was spent on buying unnecessary clothes. Okay. So
Oh,
I'm not talking
totally.
about underwear and socks and things that we need, but clothes that we just basically don't need. I moved house the other day and I realized, I said to my family, no one buy me another piece of clothing. I think I have got enough, other than socks and underwear. I've got enough clothing, I think, till the day I die. If I only rely on the existing clothes that I've got, I'm pretty sure I've got enough t-shirts, jumpers, tracky pants, and jeans to last me my entire lifetime. Forget changing fashions, but just that is enough. So if you take those three things, clothes, alcohol, and drugs, and we work out how much is spent on a daily basis on the planet, and then we take meditation and breath work, forgetting other things, amazing things like Qigong and yoga and going to do the exercise at the gym, and they're all beautiful and wonderful. What we find is that the disproportionate amount of allocation of funds, yet the benefits that come from these things, just say yoga, meditation, breath work, and the benefit that comes from these, which is collateral damage, right? The collateral
Totally.
damage of these, just those three things alone. We're not talking about guns and oil and all the other stuff. It's kind of absurd. We just think, are we really that bonkers as a species? Are we really that crazy? I did a
We
breath
are.
work.
We are.
We are. That's right. I did a conscious breath work the other day and you talked about it. Maybe you want to talk to your audience about it because I did one the other day when I was on a retreat, on the receiving end of a retreat, which is really an honor and a gift. And I was flying so high. I'm like, I was peaking in this incredible euphoria. I'm like, all I did was breathe in and out for 30 minutes.
Yeah,
And I felt so incredible. I
totally.
was like, if only people knew the power of this thing that just goes in and out of your body all day long.
If my 20-year-old self knew that at 41 years old, I would be using breath work to get a buzz, she would be laughing her ass off at me right now. She would be laughing her ass.
I'd spend a
It's
thousand or two
even
thousand
better
dollars a
than
night
any
trying to
drug
get
I've
that.
ever used.
Yeah,
What's that?
totally. Yeah, I would spend $1,000 to $2,000 to try to get that state, and then there I was, just breathing it out. In half an hour, I was there.
Totally, 2,000. I would have spent like a million for that. Like literally, I did it the other night, and I felt like I was in the ocean, and I was just like bobbing there, and my body just zero stress, just complete ease. Such a beautiful feeling.
It's a wonderful thing. And look, just to touch on this, what's happening on the planet is a paradigm shift right now. It's really exciting. It's if we just pause and take stock of what's actually going on here, the fact that you and I, you're in Canada, I'm here in Australia, and we're having this conversation, is purely indicative that things are changing and changing quickly. And they're changing at such a rate that at the moment, the one of the largest nightclub and bar owners of LA has sold his business and he's now creating health estates. It's called The Estate. He's partnering with Anthony Robbins. And these are health clubs that have breath work, that have saunas, that have ice baths, that have meditation in them. Because these people are getting ahead of the curve and they know that that portion of money that's been allocated to drugs, drinking, and clothes, it's going to move really quickly. And that's what I'm finding. One of the largest investment firms in Australia, Salter Brothers, have now become the largest retreat owners' retreat. So they've bought up all these different hotels and retreat centers, resorts around Australia, because they know that people's spending power is shifting from detrimental things to nourishing, healing things. And
Crazy.
even me running retreats, I'm seeing a lot more people inquiring about their annual holidays being spent on something, doing breath work, yoga, meditation, and eating healthy food and healing from
Yeah.
traumas, as opposed to going to Cancun and getting wasted on lines of coke and Coors beers. So
Yeah.
it's a really big shift that's happening on the planet, and I think it's going to have an exponential blast as we start to realize the capacity for human experience. Doesn't take a lot. It just needs a bit of stillness and a bit of breath work and a bit of stretching and a bit of exercise and some healthy drinks and food.
Yeah, my God. I know I was in Vegas for a retreat and just hit the strip because I've never seen it, and it was like dead. There was no one around. The casinos were completely dead. The airport was dead, and I was like, I don't even get to experience Sin City for a second, but there was no one around. So I
Imagine
think you're
Vegas
right.
in 20 years' time in an enlightened planet. Vegas will have to convert very quickly into health centers, yoga centers, spa centers. Otherwise, they're going to be clamoring and those buildings are going to be very redundant very quickly.
Very much so. So, hey, listen, why don't you quickly tell us on what is upcoming for you? What have you got going on?
Yeah, well, Saturday I've got a retreat in Bali, which is very exciting. My annual VIP, sort of not VIP, but it's sort of my premium retreat where it's really luxurious sort of surrounds, and then a lot of teaching of meditation, some speaking opportunities, and my big area is working with conscious leaders, helping them overcome limiting beliefs and blocks, and getting some structure to their businesses. So a large part of that is scaling my knowledge and getting that to other people so that they can do a lot of the work that I'm looking to do as well. And I feel that this is a big area for me going forward, is supporting other teachers and other healers to magnify and multiply their work so that they can be part of this acceleration of conscious awareness that's happening on the planet and healing that's happening on the planet.
So you've got your retreat in Bali, and I think you were telling me about some kind of speaking thing you had coming up too.
Yeah, in Bali, I've been invited to a very large, amazing conference called the I Am Creation Summit. Michael Beckworth and Adam Rohar and Katie O'Toole and Peter Sage, some amazing speakers, will be there. So I'm very blessed and honored to be standing next to them and speaking. I'll be presenting my From Me to We, the Phase Shift for Humanity keynote, which is very exciting to bring that to the community. I think there's going to be about 3,000 people, 1,000 in person and 2,000 online. So I'll be releasing some details about the online portal very soon in the next few days.
Beautiful. Thanks so much for being here. It's always so fun. The time always goes by so fast.
Yeah, it flies by.
For anyone out there, where can they find out more about you?
I think the best place to go is my LinkedIn is sorry, not LinkedIn, Instagram first, where they can message me. I'm love hearing from people, so they can always send me a message on Instagram. My website has all the details about my film, my books, my coaching programs, my retreats, my meditation courses. We're doing meditation courses on Zoom and in person now, so people can learn this beautiful ancient Vedic meditation practice with me through Zoom format, which is quite unusual and rare, but I figured it's time now to bring this to the world in a bigger way and make it more available and more accessible to people from all corners of the world. Usually it's quite exclusive for people because it's only taught in person. So now we're doing Zoom courses.
Beautiful. Thanks again. As I said, always a pleasure.
Yeah, likewise. Thanks for sharing space and thanks for listening in, everyone. It's great to share space with you.
Yes, and I mirror what Tom said. Thank you guys for joining, for listening. Before you leave today, do not forget to like and subscribe. And we're going to have all of his links in the show notes for you guys. You can have easy access to him. And sit in stillness for a while. Go do some breath work. Don't go buy drugs. Seriously, we're being honest. It is so much better than any high you can ever buy out there. Breath work. It's true. Until next time, take care, everyone.